नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're continuing reading from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is Srila Prabhupada's presentation of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, interwoven with basic philosophy. Actually, this book is in high demand right now because we have low stock. It's being reprinted right now in China, 20,000 copies, so bear with us. Some devotees wanted to take home cases when they came to the Rath Yatra. They were not available, so we just have very low stock at the moment. Okay, so we're in chapter 3, the birth of Lord Krishna. As you know, Kamsa was very demoniac person, supposed to be a king, and the king is supposed to be like the father to the citizens, but instead of being a real father, a real protector, he was killing the children of his own sister. Just imagine. Prabhupada said earlier not to be surprised by that, because in this material world, especially here in the Kali Yuga, we have so many examples of this in so many so-called royal families. They kill their own brothers and sisters just to ascend the throne. So this is kind of what's happening here. So continuing, we hear from the Vedic version that the Supreme Brahman exhibits his effulgence and therefore everything becomes illuminated. We can understand from the Brahma Sanhita that the Brahma Jyoti or the Brahman effulgence emanates from the body of the Supreme Lord. So Krishna's effulgence is known as Brahma Jyoti. And similarly, Radharani has effulgence. And what's that called? Who knows? Especially among the ladies. You're always saying, Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe. What is Radharani's effulgence called? Radha Jyoti. Jyoti. Krishna's effulgence is called Jyoti. And Radha's effulgence is called Jyoti. So Radha Jyoti is the effulgence of Radharani. And from the Brahman effulgence, all creation takes place. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord is the support of the Brahman effulgence. So, Pandits, which verse is that? No. Bhagavad Gita. No. Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Where is that? 14th chapter, text 27. Just want to keep the Pandits on their toes. All right. Therefore, originally, he is the root cause of everything. But persons who are less intelligent think that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes within this material world, he accepts the material qualities. And what are such persons called? They're mudas, rascals, but technical name, Maya bodies. A Maya body is a person who thinks that when the Supreme Lord comes into the material world, he accepts a form of Maya. In other words, a form made of the material elements. They don't see him as being transcendental. But Prabhupada's argument, or the argument of the Vaishnava scholars, is that even if you say that when the Lord comes, he accepts a form that's made of material elements, just like we have our Archa Vigraha, you could say, yes, this is a form made of stone. But because it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is emanating from him. So the so-called material elements also come from him and are always under his control. So even though we may see the Lord as having a material form, he acts spiritually because he's completely in control of the material energy. And we have so many stories of that in our history, like Sakshi Gopal. He was standing on the altar, supposedly just a deity. And then when the young brahmana asked him to please come and be my witness, Sakshi Gopal said to him, I am a deity, I can't walk. And then Prabhupada chuckled when he told that story. He said, so the young brahmana trapped him because he said, if you can talk, you can walk. So he had to walk. So the deity, even though we're seeing that Lord Jagannath is made of wood and the Rukmini Dwarkadish are made of stone, they're not stone and wood because the Supreme Lord is always in control of his material energies and he can act spiritually from any place. Even in other spiritual traditions, they have that the Lord spoke from a burning bush or from this and that. Yeah, God can speak from anywhere. He's not restricted like us. He is everywhere simultaneously and he can act anywhere whenever he wants. Prabhupada continued, such conclusions are not very mature, but are made by the less intelligent. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is directly and indirectly existing everywhere. He is outside this material creation, and he's also within it. He is within this material creation, not only as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, he is also within the atom. The existence of the atom is due to his presence. Nothing can be separated from his existence. In the Vedic injunctions, we find that the Supreme Soul, or the root cause of everything, has to be searched out because nothing exists independently of the Supreme Soul. Therefore, the material manifestation is also a transformation of his potency, as we were saying. Even if you think you're looking at stone, that stone is an emanation from Krishna, so Krishna can act through the stone. Both inert matter and the living force, the soul, are emanations from him. Only the foolish conclude that when the Supreme Lord appears, he accepts the conditions of matter. Even if he appears to have accepted a material body, he is still not subjected to any material condition. Krishna has therefore appeared and defeated all imperfect conclusions about the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's very important for us to understand these points, because as Krishna himself says, if you understand the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world, then you'll be liberated. That simple. So this is incentive for us to really concentrate on hearing this philosophy. It's not accidental that Prabhupada presented the 10th canto in this way, because in India especially, people are very fond of jumping directly to the 10th canto and hearing the pastimes of Krishna with Radharani and the gopis, neglecting the philosophical basis on which it rests. Srimad Bhagavatam is complete in 12 cantos. So the first 9 cantos give us the very deep philosophy, so that by the time we get to the 10th canto, we understand that we're not dealing with an ordinary person. It's not ordinary boyfriend-girlfriend relationship when Krishna is hanging out with Radharani and joking and teasing. We have paintings like that here. It's not an ordinary person. So when you approach the 10th canto with that mentality, then it's very likely that you will understand conclusively the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and disappearance. Shri Krishna, Janmashtami ki jai. So, continuing. This is Vasudev speaking here to his baby. I mean, yesterday, our neighbor, friend, Jalandhar Jalu, most of you know him, and his wife, Krishnavani, they had their second child. He texted me, child, everybody's doing well. But I don't think Jalu sat in front of the child and recited prayers like this. Generally speaking, when a child is born, the father doesn't sit there reciting these kind of prayers because it's just an ordinary child. Not ordinary. Any child born within a society, Prabhupada said, he actually wrote, he said that, child worship is as important as deity worship for the parents, because these children are not ordinary children. Krishna sent them to make further progress in their spiritual life, and it's a very, very serious responsibility. But still, I don't think any of our parents are going to sit there and recite these kind of verses. So for Krishna, Devaki is his Adimata. My Adimata happens to be visiting. She's been here for almost 2 weeks now. She's leaving on Sunday. So in the Vedas, there are 7 mothers that have to be recognized and honored properly. Even if you think your mother is not a devotee, still you have to give honor. And that's stated also in all revealed scriptures, other religious traditions. Honor thy mother and father so that your days may be long on the land, as stated in the Bible. So in every bona fide tradition, there is this concept of honoring your mother and your father. It's very important. Because without their care and nurturing, you would not have made it to adulthood. We see every day in the news how easily it is for, just a few days ago, some child was neglected, left in a vehicle in the hot sun and died. 4 years old. So, if we make it to adulthood, we owe you cannot repay the debt to your parents for taking care of you to the point where you can take care of yourself. So, it's very important. So here, Vasudev is offering prayers to Krishna, and next, Devaki will offer her prayers. So Vasudev continues, my Lord, your appearance, existence, and disappearance are beyond the influence of the material qualities. Because your Lordship is the Supreme Brahman and the controller of everything, there's nothing inconceivable or contradictory in you. As you have said, material nature works under your superintendence, just like a government officer working under the orders of the chief executive. The influence of subordinate activities cannot affect you. Since you are the Supreme Brahman, everything is existing within you, and since all the activities of material nature are controlled by your lordship, none of these activities affect you. So it's also significant to note that although Vasudeva and Devaki have the Vatsalya Rasa, they're in this mood of parental love for Krishna, still there's awe and reverence. When Krishna is hanging out with Yashoda and Nanda, they don't give these kind of prayers because they're seeing Krishna strictly as their son. But Vasudeva and Devaki, they still have understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality. I mean, who wouldn't? He appears with four hands and helmet. You know, if you have a child born like that, you would probably offer prayers too. But the point is that they have this mood of awe and reverence mixed in with their parental attitude towards Krishna. You're called Shuklam. Shuklam, or whiteness, is a symbolic representation of the Absolute Truth because it is unaffected by the material qualities. Lord Brahma is called a Rakta, or red, because Brahma represents the quality of passion for creation. Darkness is entrusted to Lord Shiva because he annihilates the cosmos. The creation, annihilation, and maintenance of this cosmic manifestation are conducted by your potencies, yet you are always unaffected by those qualities. As confirmed in the Vedas, Harir hi nirguna sakshat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always free from all material qualities. It is also said that the qualities of passion and ignorance are non-existent in the person of the Supreme Lord. My Lord, you are the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Great, maintaining the order of this cosmic manifestation. Yet, in spite of your being the Supreme Controller, you have so kindly appeared in my home. The purpose of your appearance is to kill the followers of the demoniac rulers of the world, who are in the dress of royal princes but are actually demons. I am sure that you will kill all of them and their followers and soldiers. So this point of God killing is extremely misunderstood in many other theological camps. On the one hand, they pray openly for God to smite their enemies, kill them. But on the other hand, when you say that God appears and kills personally, they can't understand it. What kind of God is that? God is supposed to be all love, all light. How can God kill? So they're very confused. On the one hand, they pray, God, kill my enemy. And I'm not talking just in the Old Testament. When they go to war, like Prabhupada said famously in the World War II, both sides were praying, let my father, my brother, my husband come back from the war. In other words, let him be successful, kill the enemy and come home. But when it didn't happen, when the father, brother, son, husband died, then they lost faith. What kind of God is that? I asked him to kill the enemy and let my guys come back, and he didn't do it. Instead, my guys died. What kind of God is that? So the point is, God is not our order carrier, that we can order him, kill this one and save that one. And no, he's not. We're supposed to carry God's orders. And if we have that mentality, then we can see things more, a lot more clearly. But if we're thinking that if I pray to God to do something, he must do it, no, he's not. He's independent, completely independent. He doesn't have to carry out your order, that you want this person to be killed and this person to be saved. And if he doesn't do it, then you get upset at him. It doesn't work like that. But here, Vasudeva is understanding that part of Krishna's mission in appearing in this world is to rid the world of these pretenders, these pretending rulers who are nothing but jackals. They're just sucking the life out of the citizens. Continuing, I understand that you have appeared in order to kill the uncivilized Kamsa and his followers. But knowing that you were to appear in order to kill him and his followers, he has already killed so many of your predecessors, your elder brothers. This is known as infanticide, when you kill an infant. So Kamsa was guilty of infanticide. Now he is simply awaiting the news of your birth. As soon as he hears about it, he will immediately appear with all kinds of weapons to kill you. So this is the Vatsalya Rasa getting mixed in. He knows that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He's praying to him in that mood, which means obviously nobody can kill him. But because he has parental affection, he's worried and he's warning him that Kamsa is going to come to kill you. So after this prayer of Vasudeva, Devaki, the mother of Krishna, offered her prayers. She was very frightened because of her brother's atrocities. Devaki said, quote, "My dear Lord, your eternal forms like Narayana, Lord Rama, Hayashirsha, Varaha, Nasringha, Vamana, Baladev, and millions of similar incarnations emanating from Vishnu are described in the Vedic literature as original. You are original because all your forms as incarnations are outside of this material creation. Your form was existing before this cosmic manifestation was created. Your forms are eternal and all-pervading. They are self-effulgent, changeless, and uncontaminated by the material qualities. Such eternal forms are ever-cognizant and full of bliss. They are situated in transcendental goodness and are always engaged in different pastimes. You are not limited to a particular form only. All such transcendental eternal forms are self-sufficient. I can understand that you are the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Leave the door open. It actually cools the room down nicely. Leave that door open. Yeah. After many millions of years, when Lord Brahma comes to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva then enters by the force of time into the non-manifested total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic Pradhan, and Pradhan enters into you. Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cosmic manifestation, you alone remain with your transcendental name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia. My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the director of the unmanifested total energy and the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. My Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. You are the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potent energies. All the conditioned souls are continually fleeing from one body to another and one planet to another, yet they do not get free from the onslaught of birth and death. But when one of these fearful living entities comes under the shelter of your lotus feet, he can lie down without anxiety of being attacked by formidable death. So Krishna's lotus feet are the shelter that we should always be seeking. Samasritaye padapalava pulvam mahatpadam punyesho marari bhavambuni vatsapadam parampadam padampadam yadvipadam natesham. This is mentioned that Krishna's lotus feet are the shelter of the entire, we were just hearing, Mahatattva. The entire material energy, known as Mahatattva, is sheltered under Krishna's lotus feet. So where is there any question that he can't give shelter to us teeny living entities? And if we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, this verse reminds us, then the entire vast material ocean of birth and death becomes reduced to the amount of water that is in a calf's footprint. If you've been on a farm, you may have seen little calf footprints. And that little puddle of water, even a child can step over. So when we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, then all the material miseries become shrunken down to just that size. You can easily step over it. So Prabhupada adds here, this statement by Devaki is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord himself. There the Lord says that even after traveling all over the universe, from Brahmaloka to Patala Loka, one cannot escape the attack of birth, death, disease, and old age. But one who enters the kingdom of God, the Lord says, is never again obliged to come to the material world. Devaki continues, therefore, my Lord, I request you to save me from the cruel hands of Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena. It's her brother, but she doesn't refer to him as my brother because he's so horrible. I am praying to your Lordship to please rescue me from this fearful condition because you are always ready to give protection to your servitors. Prabhupada comments, the Lord has confirmed the statement in Bhagavad Gita by assuring Arjuna, quote, you may declare to the world, my devotee shall never be vanquished. While thus praying to the Lord for rescue, Mother Devaki nonetheless expressed her motherly affection, quote, I understand that this transcendental form is generally perceived in meditation by the great sages, but I am still afraid because as soon as Kamsa understands that you have appeared, he might harm you. So I request that you, that for the time being, you become invisible to our material eyes. Prabhupada comments. In other words, she requested the Lord to assume the form of an ordinary child. Devaki continues, "My only cause of fear for my brother Kamsa is due to your appearance. My Lord Madhusudana, Kamsa may not know that you are already born. Therefore, I request you to conceal this four-armed form of your lordship, which holds the four symbols of Vishnu, namely, Kancho, the disc, the club, and the lotus flower. My dear Lord, at the end of the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation, you put the whole universe within your abdomen. Still, by your unalloyed mercy, you have appeared in my womb. I am surprised that you imitate the activities of ordinary human beings just to please your devotee." So that's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that although they're not ordinary, Kritavan Kila Karmani, Saharamena Keshava, that Lord Keshava Krishna and his brother Balaram, they appear and they move in human society just like ordinary beings. But the devotees recognize them. They know that they're not ordinary. On hearing the prayers of Devaki, the Lord replied, quote, "My dear mother, in the millennium of Swayambhuva Manu, my father Vasudeva was living as one of the Prajapatis. His name at that time was Sutapa, and you were his wife named Prishni. At that time, when Lord Brahma was desiring to increase the population, he requested you to generate offspring. You controlled your senses and performed severe austerities. By practicing the breathing exercises of the yoga system, both you and your husband could tolerate all the influences of the material laws, the rainy season, the onslaught of the wind, and the scorching heat of the sunshine." So this is what the Ashtanga Yoga is meant for. Not for increasing your sense potency for sense gratification. It's meant for controlling the senses so that one can tolerate the influences of the material elements. Examples given here, and this is Krishna speaking. "You also executed all the religious principles. In this way, you were able to cleanse your heart and control the influences of the material laws. In executing your austerity, you used to eat only the leaves of the trees which fell to the ground." Wow. We're going to have to fast all day and we're already feeling the pangs. But they were eating only the leaves that would fall from the tree. That's it. That was their prasadam. Nothing else. "Then with a steady mind and controlled sex drive, you worshiped me, desiring some wonderful benediction from me. Both of you practiced severe austerities for 12,000 years by the calculation of the demigods. During that time, your mind was always absorbed in me. When you were executing devotional service and always thinking of me within your heart, I was very much pleased with you. O sinless mother, your heart is therefore always pure. At that time also, I appeared before you in this form just to fulfill your desire, and I asked you to ask whatever you desired. At that time, you wished to have me born as your son. Although you saw me personally, instead of asking for your complete liberation from material bondage, under the influence of my energy, you asked me to become your son." Prabhupada comments, in other words, to appear in the material world, the Lord selected his mother and father, namely Prishni and Sutapa, respectively. Whenever the Lord comes as a human being, he must have a mother and a father. So he selected Prishni and Sutapa perpetually as his mother and father. And on account of this, neither Prishni nor Sutapa could ask the Lord for liberation. Liberation is not so important as the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The Lord could have awarded Prishni and Sutapa immediate liberation, but he preferred to keep them within this material world for his different appearances, as will be explained in the following verses. On receiving the benediction from the Lord to become his father and mother, Prishni and Sutapa retired from the activities of austerity and lived as husband and wife in order to beget a child who was the Supreme Lord himself. In due course of time, Prishni became pregnant and gave birth to the child. The Lord spoke to Devaki and Vasudeva, quote, "At that time, my name was Prishnagarbha. In the next millennium, you took birth as Aditi and Kashyapa, and I became your child of the name Upendra. At that time, my form was just like a dwarf, and for this reason, I was known as Vamanadev. I gave you the benediction that I would take birth as your son three times. The first time, I was known as Prishnagarbha, born of Prishni and Sutapa. In the next birth, I was Upendra, born of Aditi and Kashyapa. And now, for the third time, I am born as Krishna from you, Devaki and Vasudeva. I have appeared in this Vishnu form just to convince you that I am the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, again taking birth. I could have appeared just like an ordinary child, But in that way, you would not have believed that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken birth in your womb. My dear father and mother, you have therefore raised me many times as your child with great affection and love, and I am therefore very much pleased and obliged to you. And I assure you that this time you shall go back home, back to Godhead, on account of your perfection in your mission. I know you are very concerned about me and afraid of Kangsa. Therefore, I order you to take me immediately to Gokula and exchange me for the daughter who has just been born to Yashoda. So, Subhasprabhu has been stressing that we should be in the mood of performing menial service for the satisfaction of the Lord on His appearance day, which is true, but we should also hear continuously as far as possible all day the pastimes of the Lord. So, I leave it up to you all. Should we continue reading, or those who have some service can certainly go and do that service, but those who want to remain and hear, I am willing to go on reading. You let me know. Yes? Okay. Having spoken thus to his father and mother, the Lord turned himself into an ordinary child in their presence and remained silent. Being ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva prepared to take his son from the delivery room. And exactly at that time, a daughter was born to Nanda and Yashoda. She was Yogamaya, the internal potency of the Lord. By the influence of this internal potency, Yogamaya, all the residents of Kamsa's palace, especially the doorkeepers, were overwhelmed with deep sleep, and all the palace doors open, although they were barred and shackled with iron chains. The night was very dark, but as soon as Vasudeva took Krishna on his lap and went out, he could see everything just as in the sunlight. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that Krishna is just like sunlight, and that wherever there is Krishna, the illusory energy, which is compared to darkness, cannot remain. When Vasudeva was carrying Krishna, the darkness of the night disappeared. All the prison doors automatically opened. At the same time, there was thunder in the sky and severe rainfall. While Vasudeva was carrying his son Krishna in the falling rain, Lord Shesha, in the shape of a serpent, spread his hood over the head of Vasudeva so that he would not be hampered by the rainfall. Vasudeva came onto the bank of the Jamuna and saw that the water of the Jamuna was roaring with waves and that the whole span was full of foam. Still, in that furious feature, the river gave passage to Vasudeva to cross, just as the great Indian Ocean gave a path to Lord Rama when he was bridging over the gulf. In this way, Vasudeva crossed the river Jamuna. On the other side, he went to the place of Nanda Maharaj, situated in Gokula, where he saw that all the coward men were fast asleep. He took the opportunity to silently enter the house of Yashoda and without difficulty exchanged his son for the baby girl newly born there. Then, after entering the house very silently and exchanging the boy for the girl, he returned to the prison of Kamsa and silently put the girl on the lap of Devaki. He again clamped the shackles on himself so that Kamsa could not recognize that so many things had happened. Mother Yashoda understood that a child had been born to her, but because she was very tired from the labor of childbirth, she fell fast asleep. When she awoke, she could not remember whether she had given birth to a male or a female child. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the third chapter of Krishna, the birth of Lord Krishna. Shri Krishna Janmashtami ki jai. Shri Shri Rukmini Dwarkadish ki jai. Shri Shri Gornitai ki jai. Shri Shri Jagannath Maladev ki jai. Go Bhaktivedanta ki jai. Hari Bol. So, any discussion? Anybody have any questions about what we read or any comments that they'd like to make? Yes. Bhakta, is he stretching or does he have his hand up? All right, waiting for the microphone.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class. I was just wondering about just kind of some of the details in Krishna book are kind of kind of hard to get into. I guess it's more clearly stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, but it says that Krishna took birth in his forearmed form So a lot of times I see pictures of Krishna in his forearm form as like an adult standing next to Devaki and Vasudev. But I mean, it said that he took birth in her womb. So did he come out of her womb with the helmet and the clothes? And
good question. It is explained clearly in this 10th canto that Krishna did not take birth in the ordinary way. Because, as he himself explained here, Vasudeva and Devaki have been his mother in the past because of their purity and their pure desire to have him as their child. So, it is explained in the 10th canto that from the pure mind of Vasudeva, he was transferred to the pure mind of Devaki, and then from her mind entered into her womb. But when he appeared, it was not like, with a doctor and nurse attending. And no, he just appeared. Just came out. So for 9 months, she appeared to be pregnant. But in the last moment, he did not take birth the way an ordinary child takes birth. He just appeared, as it's stated here. He just appeared in four-handed form before them just to convince them, as he himself said, that he was the same Supreme Personality of God. And then at their request, he assumed the baby form. So it was not an ordinary birth. We should not think that Devaki was pregnant for 9 months and then went into labor and then Krishna came out like an ordinary child. Not like that. He was transferred from the pure mind of Vasudeva to the pure mind of Devaki, from the mind to the womb. She appeared to be pregnant for 9 months and then he just appeared in front of them. Just to convince us that he's not an ordinary child. Yes, Matiji. Wait for the microphone so everybody can hear. Also on the internet they can hear. Well, as he explained, that they had this desire and they performed severe austerities. And this is the real reason for austerities and the yoga system and all of that. That's for attracting the Supreme Lord and getting His favor. The Bhagavatam rejects torturing the body for political reasons. Like a lot of people are very fond of doing that in Kali Yuga. I have a political agenda, it's not being met, and therefore I go on a hunger strike for 3 weeks or whatever. That is rejected by the Bhagavatam. That type of torturing the body for political or self-aggrandizement is not recommended at all. But to attract the Lord and to get His favor and to please Him, if one performs severe austerities like they did, they were eating only the leaves that would fall from the tree. Who can do that? Or in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, he got to the point where he wasn't even eating anymore. He was just breathing once every 6 months or whatever. So those kinds of severe austerities we can't even begin to imagine. But when they're done for the satisfaction of the Lord, then they're glorified. But if we do it for some political reason or some social reason, it's just not at all recommended. Anything else? Satchitananda Prabhu. Turn it on.
Was mentioning that the condition or the situation in Satya Yuga was nice, but the demigods, Lord Brahma and everybody, make an appeal for the Lord to come because it was like a chaotic situation. 500 years ago, the same thing happened. Advaitacharya called for the Lord to come because there's so many materialistic people, free workers, and if we analyze those two situations, actually what is happening now to the present time is nothing, at least what we perceive and see, that it's 10 times more sinful and more free workers and rejecting God. So could you mention the other coming of the Lord?
Can I mention what?
I mean the other incarnation of the Lord.
Yes, of course. And so when Advaitacharya called, Lord Chaitanya appeared, and he inaugurated this Sankirtan movement. And it is stated in the 11th canto, chapter 5, text 36. I'm forgetting the Sanskrit just now, but it says that those who are intelligent and fortunate, they worship this age of Kali. Because in this age, because of the presence of the Sankirtan movement, it has become easy to attain liberation, go back to Godhead. So, yes, Kali Yuga is the worst of the four ages, obviously. Tatasyarunam dharma satyam socham samadaya. Kaliyam balina rajan nangsachyaru palam spritihi. It's stated in the Bhagavatam that due to this age of Kali, everything good deteriorates. Everything. Your memory and duration of life and all good qualities, mercy, everything deteriorates rapidly in Kali Yuga. So why do they worship this age? Because again, due to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, the Sankirtan movement is present on this planet, and if we take shelter of the Sankirtan movement, very easily we can overcome all of the miseries of this Kali Yuga and go back to Godhead. But we're not meant to do it alone. We're meant to take as many as possible with us. Not feeling that we can do anything. Those who are intelligent understand that I cannot do anything. I'm totally insignificant. Whatever I manifest in terms of activity is simply by the grace of the Lord. And even materially we can understand that. All activity begins with what we're not going to do today, which is eating. Everything begins with eating. If you don't eat, there's no question of doing anything. Right? How long is your energy going to run? An adult human body can go maybe a day or two without eating and still perform some activity. But after that, finished. Finished. So all activity begins with eating. And where does food come from? Even a dyed-in-the-wool materialist has to admit that the scientists can't produce anything edible. And if any rascal scientists say they can do it, Prabhupada challenged them. He was very proud of, what was his name? The devotee that challenged the scientists on that point. Hamsiduddha, yeah. Hamsiduddha actually openly challenged the scientists. He said, if you think you can produce something edible, we'll put you in a lab somewhere and give you all the raw materials you want, as much hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, produce one apple. They can't do it. So anybody intelligent understands that food is a gift from God. Without food, I can't do anything. Food is a gift from God. Therefore, whatever I do should be offered to God. God is giving me the food to produce the energy to work, so whatever work I perform has to be offered to God. Any intelligent person can understand that. So if we're intelligent, we don't take credit for whatever we do. We immediately give credit to God, because without food, we can't do anything. Without intelligence, you can't work. Intelligence is also provided by Krishna. If you're not intelligent, you may have strength. So many people pump iron and work out and may have strength, but if we're unintelligent, you wouldn't want to employ them. Who wants a very strong fool running around your office or whatever? You don't. Person has to be already trained or at least trainable. It means there has to be a little intelligence there that you can train. So without food, you can't work. Without intelligence, you can't work properly. Intelligence is also given by Krishna. Krishna is known as Dhyanpati, the Lord of Intelligence. This is Shukadev Goswami in the second canto. He recites that nice verse. Shyampati, Yagyapati, Prajapati, Dhyanpati, Lokapati, Dharapati, Patirgatis Chandras of Vrishni Satvatam, Prasidatam Me Bhagavan Satampati. So he's giving Krishna title Pati, Lord, or control of everything, including Dhyan, your intelligence. So without intelligence, we can't work properly. Without food, we won't work at all. So where are they coming from? Krishna. Everything is coming from Krishna. So very intelligent. That's why it's so important, again, to hear and study the earlier cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because when one is completely steeped in that philosophy, then we understand who we're dealing with. And when Krishna Janmasthami comes around, we can wholeheartedly put our energy into worshipping Krishna. Because we understand Krishna's position, or at least we have heard of Krishna's position. But those who don't know, they may go around saying God. Everybody says God. And my mother's here and she's very much into the Olympics. So every day I see at least a little bit of it when I go home. And every winner, practically, every medal winner, the first thing they say is, thank God. Praise God. God be praised. So, yeah, everybody's praising God. But who is God? They don't have the details. So that's what this tradition that we're very fortunate to be a part of, that's what we have to offer. We can give total details of who is God. Prabhupada said we have his address, we have his phone number, we know who his mother is, who his father is, we know everything. This is the beauty of following this tradition. And we can offer that to others in the form of Srila Prabhupada's books. So like I said, Krishna book is in low stock right now, but they'll be back in stock in about a month. We'll get another 20,000 from China. And so whatever stock we have, it's very auspicious on Janmasthami if you can distribute one Krishna book. Srila Prabhupada would be very, very pleased. And this hearing the philosophy on Janmasthami is very important. I'm just now reading Mukunda Maharaj's book, Miracle on Second Avenue, and so he was one of the few devotees who happened to be present at the very, very first Janmasthami that was celebrated in ISKCON. And that's what Prabhupada did. He brought all the devotees together in the storefront on 26 Second Avenue, and they sat all day hearing philosophy, hearing about Krishna. That was their main activity, the whole day, just sitting and hearing. It was their first time. They had never fasted all day in their life. So the stomach was grumbling, but Prabhupada, no. He made them sit there all day and listen to philosophy about Krishna. So this is the main activity on Janmasthami. Hearing and remembering the Lord. And then by the time midnight comes around, if you've been hearing about Krishna all day long from authorized source, Krishna book, then when the doors open at midnight, you're ready to give your heart to Krishna. So, Shri Krishna Janmasthami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Hari Bol.